What do you hold on? 428.
428, Pasuk Tes. Perek of base. Yeah, ki yitainish. Okay, last time we learned, the Torah started talking about what's called the four shomrim, the four people who are guarding objects for other people. They call the shomer. And we learned that there's four types of a shomer. We didn't learn yet. We're in the middle of learning. Last time we learned about somebody who's called the shomer chinam. Shomer chinam means he doesn't get paid to watch. He watches for free. He does somebody a favor. He watches for free. And therefore the din is, if he's negligent, he has to pay. If it was stolen or lost, he doesn't have to pay. If it was an accident, for sure he doesn't have to pay. That's the din of a shomer chinam. Okay? He watches for free, he's doing you a favor. If he's doing you a favor, the Torah is lenient as far as the payment responsibilities. But obviously if he's negligent, then he's like he damaged it with his hand, and then he would have to pay. Now, in these psukim, the Torah is going to be discussing what's called a shemer sachar. A shemer sachar means a person who's paid to watch. You pay him, and therefore he's automatically responsible more, because if he's getting paid to watch, so obviously he has to watch it in a stronger way. So the Torah says like this, Ki yitein isho rehu, if a man will give to his friend, chamer, whether it's a donkey, shur, an ox, a isa, or a sheep, or of a chol behema lishmer, any animal to watch, umeis, and the animal died, meaning natural death, or nishba, or broke, meaning something broken, leg, broken hand, or whatever, or nishba, or it was taken into captivity, meaning somebody came and stole it, ein roa, and nobody saw it. Okay? So basically he's saying, this is a case where it was stolen, nobody saw it. So it says, Shvuas Hashem, Tiya Ben Shneim.
Close the door.
No, somebody's coming in. Shvuas Hashem, the Shvuah of God, we have to learn a few psukim and explain this whole thing. Shvuas Hashem, the oath of God, Tiya Ben Shneim, should be between them. Im Leshalach Yodi Benachis Re'ehu, that he didn't use the object. V'lokach Ba'olav, and then the owner takes it, and V'lo Yishalim, and he doesn't have to pay. Meaning as follows. We learned last time, and this is again what the Torah is emphasizing. When somebody is watching something for somebody, if you gave me something to watch, I am not allowed to use it. Page 428. I am not allowed to use it. Because I'm watching it for you. I'm not allowed to use it at all. The second I use it, the second I put my finger on it to use, I become what's called a thief. And whatever happens to it, I have to pay. Doesn't matter what happens to it. Just like if I steal something from you, I have to give it, let's say I steal your cow, and then the animal dies a natural death. I can't come along and say, well, you know, it would have died in your house anyway, as the Gemara uses the expression, that Malach HaMavis, the angel of death, what's the difference if he's here or there? He's going to kill the animal anyway. Nevertheless, the law is, if I steal it, I become automatically responsible for anything that happens to the object. I have to pay it back. If I'm watching something for somebody, the second I touch it to use, even if I don't actually use it, I put my hand on it to use, I'm automatically obligated in whatever happens to it. So even though the Torah is discussing accidents that happen, the pasuk says it died, something broke by mistake, it was a complete accident, or it was taken away in captivity by something else. The first thing I have to do is to swear that I didn't use it. Then if I can prove that an accident happened, either, as we'll learn, through witnesses, or I swear that an accident happened, then the din is, like he says, lo yishalim, I don't have to pay.
Two separate swearing?
It's really three oaths. It's all together in one oath, but it's three stages of the oath. You swear I didn't use it, I swear that I didn't keep it for myself, and then I swear that an accident happened. But if you look in the first pasuk, the Torah says, ain roe, that nobody saw it happened. If somebody sees it happen, then you don't swear. The only time you swear is if there's no witnesses. But if a witness saw what happened, two witnesses saw what happened, and they saw it was an accident, then I don't have to swear. Because obviously they saw what happened. That it was an accident, natural causes or whatever. Now there's a lot of laws, so to speak, what is considered a shemes sachar. I'll give you an example. Shemes sachar normally means, as the pasuk is discussing, you get paid to watch. What happens, there's an interesting argument in the Gemara. Sometimes they don't get paid to watch, but I might be considered getting paid. For instance, there's a din in the Torah, if I find a lost article in the street, and it has some form of identification, that the owner would be able to identify it, the din is, I have to take it to my house and keep it until I find the owner. Like, I just can't keep it for myself. I have to watch the, let's say, find an animal on the street, but there's a brand on it that you can tell that who the owner of the animal is. The din is, I have to take the animal into my house and I have to guard it and take care of it until the rightful owner comes and claims it. Now, I'm watching your animal. I don't know who you are yet, but I'm watching your animal. Am I considered a paid watchman, or am I considered a watchman for free? Now, logically, somebody will say, well, listen, you're not getting paid to do it. You're doing it for the mitzvah, you're not getting paid. But the Gemara says, according to one opinion, that I am considered getting paid for watching. Why? Because there's a din. If I'm doing a mitzvah, and I'm busy with a mitzvah, that I cannot do another mitzvah, it's called osig b'mitzvah, partim in a mitzvah. If I'm occupied in doing a mitzvah, and therefore I cannot do another mitzvah, I don't have to keep the other mitzvah. But I'll give you an example. People that are watching a dead body, God forbid, they're doing a mitzvah, so certain times they don't have to daven, certain times they might not have to say the Shema, because they can't do both things at the same time, if they have nobody to change off with. So there's a din, ha'izik b'mitzvah, partim in a mitzvah. So the Gemara says, while I'm watching your cow, I'm doing a mitzvah, and therefore if a poor man comes over to me and asks me for tzedakah, I don't have to give it to him. So therefore I'm gaining money by watching your animal. In addition to the fact that there's another concept, a mitzvah is worth money. The Gemara says, if I steal a mitzvah from you, you're about to do a mitzvah, and I steal the mitzvah from you, I have to pay you money. 10 golden pieces. It's not done today, but if I steal a mitzvah from you, a mitzvah is worth money. So if I'm watching somebody's animal doing a mitzvah, according to many opinions, two opinions in the Gemara, but according to one opinion in the Gemara, that's the halacha, that I'm considered watching for pay. Because I don't have to give tzedakah to the poor person, plus I'm getting a mitzvah. So you don't need necessarily, you know, mean getting paid. Or, if I do something else for you, I say, you know what? I'll watch your cow and you'll watch my cow. You know, different times, whatever. So because it's a trade-off, it's considered getting paid. Because I'm gaining by it. Because I'm watching your cow, you're going to watch my cow. So therefore, it is a trade-off, and therefore it is considered getting paid. And because I'm getting paid, like we learned, the obligation of watching is stricter, is more stringent, and therefore the din is, if it's stolen or lost, I have to pay. If an accident happened, I don't have to pay. Now, there's one more interesting din. There's zillions of interesting dins. But what happens if I started off being negligent, and then at the end an accident happened, that's what killed the cow? Chilasa b'pshia v'sofa b'ones. The halacha is, it's an argument again in the Gemara, the halacha is, it's also considered negligence. You have to pay. I'll give you an example. I'm watching your cow, and I leave it in the barn wide open. Okay, then the animal went out, and it had a natural death. I'm still obligated to pay. Because I left the barn door open, so I started off being negligent. Even though the end result was accident, it's considered negligence. I would have to pay. So coming back to the psukim here, the pasuk says, number one, the first thing is if there are no witnesses. Secondly, you have to swear that you didn't, that you didn't use it, because once you use it, you automatically become a thief, and whatever happens to it, you have to pay. And he says, then, then the owner takes the animal, you don't have to pay. Okay, then he says, what happens though if the animal got stolen from this watchman, from the shomer? So then the din is, yishalim leba'olav, you have to pay the owner. Because again, this is speaking about a shomer sachar, a person who is paid to watch. So if it was stolen or lost, now, by the way, the comment, the Gemara just says, just to clarify, stolen means somebody comes in the middle of the night and steals. Okay? Then I'm obligated to pay. But if a guy comes up to me with a gun and says, give me the cow or else I'll kill you, that's not called stealing. That's called an accident. And you don't have to pay for that. Because what are you supposed to do? It's not, you could have watched it better. I'm holding the animal. You can't get any better than that. The guy comes to me with a gun and says, give it to me or else I'll kill you. So that's called anus. That's called accident that you don't have to pay for. But if you watched it, and it got stolen or lost, you're obligated to pay. Then the next pasuk continues. Im taref yitaref, what happens if the animal was torn to death, meaning a bigger animal came and, you know, killed this animal? Yivia aid, you should bring a witness. Hatrefa la yishalim, for a torn animal he does not pay. Meaning like this, and the Gemara says, the Gemara looks, Rashi explains this, it depends what type of animal ripped apart this, let's say you're watching somebody's lamb, sheep, and a big lion comes, and it rips the animal apart, you don't have to pay. Because there's no way you yourself could protect the sheep from a lion. But if it was a little cat that came, or a dog, they came and started up with the sheep and hurt the sheep, then you do have to pay. What?
If a sheep or something gets stolen, and there's a guy, he's a paid watchman, and the animal gets stolen, and let's say the person who stole it wants to bring it back to the owner and pay him back. So does the person who was watching it still have to pay?
No. Of course, if he got the animal back, he doesn't. But the Gemara discusses another different scenario. A thief pays double. Correct? What happens if I'm watching your animal, and you're paying me to watch? Right? And I paid for, and the animal got stolen. And I paid you for the animal. Okay? Then they find the thief who pays double. Who gets it? You or me? What?
The watch.
You. You already paid.
Because as soon as I pay for the animal, as soon as I pay you for the animal, it becomes mine. So if they find the ganef, I mean, the principal for sure I get back. But even the double I get back because now it became my animal. There's an interesting halachic discussion over here in this whole concept of watchmen. If I'm watching your cow, okay, the Torah is using cows, so we use cows. I'm watching your cow. and then the animal got stolen or lost. When does my obligation begin? Does it begin when it was stolen or lost? Or does it begin as soon as I took the animal from you?
That's what I say.
There's an interesting argument. The Alter Rebbe has his opinion, and other people have their opinions about what the halach is. The Alter Rebbe says a very interesting concept of a shomer. When you give me an animal to watch, I have an obligation to return the animal to you. That means the obligation begins when I took it to watch. The Torah comes along and says, under certain conditions, you are freed from your obligation. That means if an accident happened, the Torah says, okay, you know what? I'm freeing you from the obligation that you really have. According to the Alter Rebbe holds that when I take your animal to watch, or your object to watch, I have a biblical obligation to return it. Therefore, if I'm negligent, the obligation doesn't start when I became negligent. The obligation started from the beginning. I have an obligation to give back what I took. The Torah says that if certain things happen, we're going to free you from that obligation. And other opinions say, no, the obligation starts when the negligence happened, when it was stolen or lost, or then that's when the obligation starts.
What difference?
There's a halachic difference. By Chometz and Pesach, whose is it? There's a lot of, you know, whatever. But the point is, you gave me something to watch, I have to give it back. Certain times the Torah says, listen, you're a normal human being, what do you expect? You know, if an accident happens, how can they obligate you to pay it back? In the next Yupsukim, we're going to learn about a shoyl, about a borrower. He is very, very strict. His laws are very strict.
What happens if weather conditions, like, kill off an animal, like a cow or something?
Were you negligent or weren't you negligent?
I mean, no, I'm saying, let's say we kept it outside.
Well, that's negligence. Yeah. If there's a Katrina going around, and you're a tsunami, and you keep your animal outside, so obviously that's negligence. That's not called watching. The Gemara says an interesting statement about money. The only way you could legally, halachically watch money is by burying it in the ground. If you put it under your mattress and a guy comes and steals it, that's called negligence. The only way you can watch the money, the Gemara says, today it doesn't apply because today we have different concepts, but the Gemara says, Ein shmira ela bekarka. The only way you can watch money is burying it in the ground. And if you don't bury it in the ground, it's called negligence. You didn't watch it properly. They tell a story. There was once a Yiddish traveler that was coming, is traveling on the way, and he stopped by an inn before Shabbos. And he didn't want to hold all his money in the inn because he didn't know who the innkeeper was, if it was a Jew or not a Jew, honest, he didn't know. So before Shabbos, he found a place outside the inn, which he thought was hidden, and he dug a hole in the ground and he buried his money. And after Shabbos, when he was leaving, he was going to go get his money. What happened, what he didn't know, is while he was digging the hole to bury his money, the innkeeper was watching him. And the innkeeper was a crook. So, after the guy buried the money, the innkeeper came and took all the money. The guy comes after Shabbos to find his money. It's not there. And he knew that the only one in the world that could have seen him was the innkeeper. But he couldn't come to the innkeeper and accuse him, say, hey, you thief, give me back my money. He had no proof of it. But he was this smart guy. So he went over to the innkeeper, and he said to the innkeeper, You look like a smart guy. I need advice from you. I came with two sums of money. One money I buried in a place. And now I have a second sum of money. And I want to know if I should bury it in the same place or should I bury it in a different place. What do you think I should do? So the innkeeper thinks to himself, hey, if this guy's going to put the money back in the same place in the first place, I'm going to get double whammy, double money. So the innkeeper says to the guy, my opinion is you should bury it in the same place. Because why should you have to worry about two different places? You might mix up, you might lose it. Why don't you bury it in the same place? So the Jew says, it's a good idea. I think in an hour or two I'm going to go. I like your advice. Meanwhile, the innkeeper realized that if the guy goes back and doesn't find his money, he's not going to do it. So he went and put back the money that he stole. That when the guy comes, he's going to put the other money there too. So the Yidl took his money and left. But the Gemara says the only way you can watch money is in the ground. That's it. Okay, then it says, if the animal is torn apart, then... What?
It was Isfahani.
Isfahani? Don't get it. Okay, there's another din over here that they bring down, which could be very relevant in today's world, in business. And by the way, you get a lot of times din terrorists, rabbinic court cases with these types of things. What happens if I have a diamond that I want to sell? I have a diamond that I want to sell. And you come over to me and say, you know what? I want to sell it for you. Let's say I want to sell it for $1,000. Or whatever. So you say to me, you know what? Give me the stone for $1,000. If I sell it for more, I'll keep the money. And if I don't sell it, I'll give it back to you. And you give me back the $1,000. Okay? It's a very common case in today's world. The guy that took the diamond is called a Shomer Sachar. He's called paid to watch. Because he's getting benefit out of it. He's watching the diamond for the other guy, he's getting benefit out of it. Because if he sells it for more, he can get the profit. So therefore, in that case, it would be a shomer sachar. So if the guy's diamond got stolen, the merchant would have to pay the money to the original owner. Because you're getting benefit from it. Anytime you get benefit out of watching, you're called a paid watchman.
What about if a man who's watching a cow, money, a diamond, is armed all the time?
Yeah.
And along comes a potential robber, and he blows the robber's brains out of his head, or he kills the robber.
He did a mitzvah.
Doesn't get punished.
Well, it depends if the robber comes to kill him first. You can't just go around killing people. If the guy is self-defense, you can kill him first. But you can't kill a guy just for stealing unless if you know he's going to kill you. We learned that before in the Psukim.
What about if you're like a sheep and a wild animal comes on it? You can't.
But that's what it says. In Taref Yutaref, if it's a wild animal that you cannot control, like a lion is coming, so then you don't have to pay. That's called an accident. Otherwise, you do. Okay. Let's go to the next din, even though there's zillions of dinim here to talk about Shemesh Sachar, but we'll go to the next one, which is also more very practical also.
What page?
Same page, 428, Pasuk 13. The next Pasuk is discussing the din of a shoyel. A shoyel is a guy who borrows something. That means you lend me an object to use. And he's different that he's a shamer because I'm watching your object. It's not mine, it's your object. But this object I'm allowed to use. That's what I'm borrowing it for. I borrow your cow, as the Torah says, I borrow your cow to plow my field. Okay? So it's not my cow, it's your cow. I'm watching your cow for you. But I am getting all the benefit. I'm not doing you a favor, you're doing me a favor. Because I'm not even paying for it. I'm not renting it, I'm borrowing it. But I'm borrowing it to use. So the Torah says, V'chiyishal ish mi'imri'eyu. What happens if somebody borrows something from his friend, V'nishbar imes, and the animal became broken, or the object became broken or died, Ba'olav ein imay shalim yishalim. If the owner is not there, at the time of the lending, I'll explain this whole din, then you have to pay. The pasuk is very unclear, okay? But the Gemara has hundreds of pages on this, on these two psukim. The din is as follows: a borrower who's called a shoyel has to pay for everything. I borrow your cow, an accident happens, I have to pay. Stolen or lost, for sure I have to pay. Negligence, I for sure have to pay. The only time a shohel doesn't pay is when two things happen. One is called in Hebrew Mesa Machmas Malacha. It died from the natural work that I borrowed it for. Or if the owner was there at the time of the borrowing. Meaning as follows. If I borrow your cow to plow my field, and in the middle of plowing, the cow dies. The din is, I don't have to pay. If I borrow your axe to chop wood, and in the middle of chopping normal wood, not steel, normal wood that's made to chop, the axe breaks, I don't have to pay. I borrow your cow, your car, and under normal driving conditions, the car dies, I don't have to pay. Now, the Gemara uses the expression, if I borrowed your cow to plow flat land, and I take it to the mountain to plow, which is much more difficult, so then I'm obligated to pay. Because that's not what I borrowed it for.
If you ask the guy, want to take it to the mountain, then it's okay?
Yeah, if I ask the guy, can I take it up to the mountain, he says, no problem. And then it dies plowing the mountain. That's what you borrowed it for, so then you don't have to pay. Anytime you borrow something, and it dies in the natural work that you borrowed it for, you don't have to pay. And this is a very practical thing, by the way. You borrow things from somebody, and it dies in the middle for whatever, or breaks in the middle, whatever. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two is, if at the time I borrowed the cow, I asked the owner of the cow to do something for me. At the time of the borrowing, I said, do me a favor and do this. And the guy did it. It's like I borrowed the cow together with the owner, and then the Torah says, I don't have to pay for anything that happens to the cow. Is it logical or not logical? That's debatable. But that's the halach. What?
I was going to say, okay, let's say the guy borrows the cow, and he uses it incorrectly. Something happens to the cow. Okay, let's say I want to borrow your cow Wednesday, right? And I'll give it back to you Thursday, because I know you're going to plow on Thursday. So let's say it breaks down on Wednesday. Now he can't plow on Thursday. Are you liable for the fact that he can't do his business on that day?
No.
Also?
No.
So he's really sunk. The guy who lent it.
God sunk him. By the way, I mean, there's pages of Gemara and all this stuff. But just to say some of the few interesting concepts. If I borrow your cow for no amount of time, okay, and 10 hours later, 5 hours later, you say, oh, you know what, I need my cow back. I have to give it back to you. But what happens if I borrow your cow for a week? And 3 days later you come back to me and you say, Oy vey, I need my cow. I do not have to give it back to you. Because if I borrowed it for a week, it's mine for a week. You can't come back and say, listen, it's my cow, I'm doing you a favor, you have to give it back to me whenever I want. If you made up a week, it's a week. And less than a week, you can't demand it back. I mean, you can ask it, it doesn't have to give it to you.
When they do the transaction, do they have like a star or something? Or
doesn't matter.
They don't need one? Or?
If everybody agrees, you don't need a document.
Why would anybody ever loan anybody anything?
It's called a mitzvah.
Is that an actual mitzvah?
To lend something to somebody? Yeah. In a few psukim we're going to learn, there's, and this is, by the way, this is different than lending money. Lending a cow, a car, a pen, an axe, whatever, okay, is different than lending money. When I lend you $1,000, when I lend you money, the money becomes yours. You don't give me back that $1,000. You have to give me back $1,000. But that $1,000 is made to spend. So the second I give you the $1,000 in a loan of money, it's not my money anymore. It's your money. But if I give you, I lend you a book, I lend you a table, I lend you a chair, I lend you whatever it is, then you can't give me back a different chair. You have to give me back the chair I gave you. There's a big difference. I'll give you a simple example. A man lends a woman $1,000. 3 days later, he says to the woman, you know that money I gave you yesterday, I mean a few days ago for the loan? Become married to me with that money. And that mukadashously, with that loan that I gave you. The din is, the woman is not married. There's no kedushin. Because right now he gave her nothing. But if a man lent a book to a woman, let's say, and after 2 days he says to the woman, Harei at mukadashasli, the book zu, with this book, she is mukadashas. Why? Because when I lent you the book, it's my book. It's not your book. It's my book. So therefore, right now, I'm giving you a book. So right now, I'm giving you valuable things for Kedushin. But when I give you, lend you money, it's not my money anymore. The money is made to spend. You happen to owe me $1,000. It has nothing to do with the money I gave you. And therefore, if I lend you $1,000, and the money got stolen, a minute after I gave it to you, a guy came over to you with a gun and took away the $1,000, you still owe me $1,000. But if I lent you a book and a guy came over with a gun and took away the book, then you don't have to pay.
You don't have to pay if...
In that case of anus, you wouldn't have to pay. Because that's completely whack out of the ordinary. I'll give you another example. I say to you, do me a favor, lend me your cow. Okay? And you send it with one of your servants, one of your kids. You send me the cow. And along the way, the cow dies. I don't have to pay for it because I never got it yet. But if I say to you, lend me your cow and send it with one of your kids. And you sent it with one of your kids, and the cow dies, then I do have to pay.
Because of what you're suggesting?
Because the second I said send it with the kid, I get it. I acquired it. So then I'm responsible. The same thing, by the way. If I owe you $1,000, if I owe you $1,000, and I send my kid to give you back the $1,000, and somebody steals it from my kid, so I still owe you $1,000, right? But if you tell me, send the money with your kid, and I listened to you, and I sent the money with my kid, and the money got stolen from my kid, I don't have to pay you anymore. Because you told me to send it with my kid. I sent it with your kid, so I'm not obligated anymore. Now it's your headache.
You need to be very honest for these things.
People are supposed to be honest.
Yes, you told me, but you don't remember. But yes, you remember.
Oh, that's a different story. No.
It has to be documented, you know?
You know, there's an expression in Yiddish that ashlos is nishfar aganef. Okay? For all those that speak Farsi, a lock is not for a thief. Because if a thief wants to steal, a lock is not going to stop him. A lock is for people that are borderline honest. They're not really thieves, but they're, you know, so if there's a lock, it's going to hinder them, it's going to hinder them from stealing. But if a guy wants to steal, a lock is not going to help it. Right? If a person wants to be honest, you have to be honest. But one of the reasons why Torah demands, by the way, in Halacha, it says, if I lend you money, there's no trust, there's no faith, there's no nothing. You put it on paper. Okay. And even relatives, by the way, in logic Halacha says, you lend money to a relative, you know, come on, we trust you, we're brothers, you know. Brothers, they're closer than brothers or whatever. Everything on paper. Because then, you have less problems. It's clear, it's proper, and so on. And in fact, the Gemara says even more. If two people testify on a loan. Let's say I lent you $1,000 and you two testify that I lent you the money. Okay? That's the best proof possible. Yet the Gemara says, sign your names on the paper anyway. Even though halachic, you don't have to. Because the witnesses are here and they testified, that's good. Why should the witnesses sign on a piece of paper? Because one day the witnesses might go out of town, overseas. One day the witnesses might die, and then you're stuck without proof. What are you going to do? The witnesses are not here. So if they sign their name on a document, and people can validate or verify their signature, so then you have it, it's safe. So Halacha says you have to be safe.
What about if an individual borrows $100,000 from the Bank of America?
No.
And he does everything in his power not to pay Bank of America, tell all kind of lies. He didn't get the money from them.
He must be Jewish.
No.
Oh.
He's Italian.
Oh, okay. They're brothers.
Then what then?
What do you mean then? Then Bank of America takes you to court.
And
what do you mean Bank of America is going to give you $100,000 without documents?
No.
Without collateral?
I know that.
Okay, so what's the...
Funny, because you're talking about from individual to individual, but most people borrow money from banks.
Yeah. But while we're on this topic, there's another big problem borrowing money from other people. You know, sometimes people borrow money from somebody's line of credit. Right? You have a line of credit in the bank. Let's say I have a $100,000 line of credit in the bank. And you want to borrow $50,000. I don't have $50,000 to give you, right? So what do? I borrow from the bank for you on my line of credit, right? And then you're going to pay back interest. So in Judaism, you have a problem called ribis. And if I lend you money on my line of credit, and you pay the interest to the bank, that's forbidden, according to Halacha.
It's like you're charging them interest?
Because you have nothing to do with the bank. I lent you that the $100,000. The bank didn't lend you the $100,000, right? I lent you the $100,000. I just used my line of credit, but I lent you the $100,000. So when you pay the bank interest, you're paying me interest, and that's forbidden.
Can you do something else?
I mean, you make a, you know, leave it to the Jews. Heteriska, you know, whatever. There are ways to get around it. That it's not a loan, it's an investment in a business, you know.
John, what? Do you let Lolita you go to the bank and borrow money on your account?
Sha.
What if you borrow the money and when you want to return it, instead of giving them interest, you use another currency? Let's say gold, for instance.
It's a big problem.
Why?
Because you don't know the value of gold. It fluctuates. It fluctuates.
By choice.
Doesn't matter.
Even if it's to their advantage.
Yeah, that's interest. If I lend you a dozen eggs, yeah? And when I lent you the dozen eggs, it was a dollar a dozen. And then when you pay it back, it went up to $1.10 a dozen. You can't give me back a dozen eggs because that's interest.
What do you give back?
You have to give back the value of how much the eggs were when you borrowed it. That's why in many firm circles, because of this, you know, neighbors always borrow, you know, neighbors, especially duplexes, and you live next to each other, you borrow eggs and flour, and so what they usually, you know what they really do? Give me a dozen eggs. You're not borrowing a dozen eggs. He's giving you a present. You give me a present, you give him back a present. That's not a loan. But if you say, lend me a dozen eggs, or lend me a bottle of milk, and then the price of milk goes up, and you pay back a gallon of milk, so then you paid interest.
So can you say, give me $3,000?
Yeah, but technically the guy doesn't have to pay it back.
But you tell the guy, I'm going to pay you back $3,500. I'm going to give you back $3,500.
Then you're not giving. Then it's called lending.
Nobody's going to give you. They say, give it to me.
Then technically you don't have to pay it back.
What if the price goes down?
Then it's not interest. Then it's good.
It
interest is when you pay more than the loan. Yeah, but interest is only when you pay more than the loan, not less. So it's not a problem.
No, but you're given less value, I guess.
That doesn't matter. If I lend you $100 and you pay me back 99, that's fine. That's not interest. If you pay me back 101, that's interest. Shh.
If someone lends someone else money and they put it in the bank and it collects interest, is that okay? I mean,
that's also a shaila. There's something called Jewish banks. Bank Leumi, bank, you know, all these Jewish banks, yeah? When you put money in a savings account there, they pay you interest. Correct? How can you take interest from a Jew?
Jewish bank.
No.
Well, so you can't bank with Jewish banks.
I didn't say that. I asked you a question.
No, but you're right. You're saying that halachically you shouldn't.
Or, if you take a loan, if you take a mortgage from bank...
They're going to charge you a percent.
Right.
So you can't... It's not a right thing to do.
I didn't say that. I asked a question.
The whole Israel is living on something...
So first of all, the banks in Israel have on the walls what's called Heter Iska.
Have what?
Heter Iska. One sec. I'll explain in a second. Secondly, there are opinions in Halacha that write that a corporation is a non-existent entity.
Also, there are loopholes in this
exactly.
Little Torah.
Wake up, smell the coffee. Selling chametz is not a loophole?
Right, I got you.
Okay, so. But it's a legal loophole. Selling chametz to a guy is not a legal loophole.
It's true.
But it's a legal loophole. It's not the Baba Meisa.
It's legal because you make it legal.
But Torah allows... If you have something called income tax, and the government says... You're allowed this deduction. And you take the deduction. Is that stealing?
No.
Why not? Because the ones that made the rules allow certain deductions. God who made the rules allowed certain things. If you don't own the chametz, you're allowed to have it over Pesach, right? If it's not yours. So if you sell it, it's not yours. It's not cheating the Torah.
So wait a minute. We're going to
say
about Israel.
Heter Iska is... this is way off this topic. But the reason I'm saying, because in a few psukim we're going to get it anyway. About loans. Heter Iska means that I'm not lending you the money. Iska means a business. I can invest in your business, not as a loan. I'm investing in a business, and I say to you that my investment, it has to get a return. I'm not lending you the money. I'm investing in your business. And as an investor, I have a right to return. And my return is 8%. But it's not a loan. It's a business. That's one concept. Another concept, which is a very unique concept in Halacha, the Torah says you can't take interest from a person, or you can't pay interest, or both are forbidden. You can't take interest, and it's forbidden to pay interest, right, from a person. Now, if you have a corporation where an individual is not responsible, there are poskim in Halacha, like Drogachev and others, that write that a corporation is a non-existent entity. Meaning, who am I paying interest to? I'm not paying it to a person. I'm paying it to something called a corporation. I'm not paying interest to a person. I'm not paying interest to a Jew. Because a corporation is nobody. Who's a corporation? Is it any individual? No.
Could be.
What do you mean it could be? Most corporations, now they're trying to change the laws because people are getting out of everything by making corporations, and then, you know, they're not personally liable for it. Mm-hmm. But officially, a corporation means I personally am not responsible for it. Mm-hmm. What's the whole concept of a corporation? That I'm not responsible as a... You can't come to me for the money. Go to the corporation. The corporation's dead. There's no money. That's it. You can't come to me. What?
Is that against the Torah?
No. So many banks, let's say, that are corporations, so there are authorities that say you can take interest and give interest because you're not taking or giving it from somebody.
But Bank of America is a corporation.
Correct.
So if you're paying back to the bank for
a... You're paying nobody.
It could be an investment... No, with the loan, like the guy who gives you a credit line.
No. If you make a heter iska, then it's a different story.
Exactly. So then your friend can lend you $3,000, make the check payable to the corporation, and you pay him back.
It's possible. Yeah. We're talking general now. There are technicalities that you have to do, yeah.
It's better than.
But anyway, we got into this whole discussion by your question about honesty. Right.
We're all
crooked. Whatever it was. No, the question is, in all this stuff of honesty, do you have to believe another person? Of course, you have to believe another person. But at the same time, the Torah says, if there are witnesses that testified what happened, then you can't swear to get out of paying. And we learned last week, if you remember, rarely in Torah do you swear and take money. Okay, the shomer is swearing here to get out of payment. If he says, he swears that it was stolen or lost, or that an accident happened, he's swearing to get out of paying. Rarely do you swear and take money. The only time you swear and take money is if the guy that's supposed to swear can't swear, because he's a thief, a liar, that Bezdin says, we're not going to let you swear because it's worthless. So then the court say to the other guy, then you have to swear and then we'll give you the money. But in Torah law, you never swear and take. You swear to get out of payment. And the Torah says that, like we learned last time, the oath was so powerful that the world shook when God said in Ten Commandments, you know, don't swear falsely in my name and so on and so forth, that it gets to a point that the Torah says that even somebody who's only suspected of being dishonest in money, according to the opinion in the Gemara, we still let him swear. If a guy is for sure a thief, then we don't let him swear. Because he's going to swear falsely also. What's the big deal? So what's the oath going to do? But if a guy is only suspected of stealing, that means we can't prove that he's a thief. but it's only suspecting him of being dishonest, the Gemara says we still let the guy swear, because we assume that even though he's dishonest in money, when it comes to saying God's name with the whole scary, you know, thing of a shvu, of an oath, that we trust him. What?
If somebody lends somebody money, let's say they lend them $5, and then the guy comes back to pay back, and he gives him back $4.95, is he allowed to mochel?
Sure, he can forgive the whole debt.
He can forgive the whole thing?
Not only that, you know, you can sell a debt. Women, the Gemara talks about women selling their ksuba. Okay, I'll give you a simple example. Today is called pay advance. The payment advance. Okay, what happens if I lent you $1,000 for 6 months? Okay? I lent you $1,000 for 6 months. But I need the money now. I need the money back now. So I sell him the loan for $950. So he eventually is instead of me, so he collects $1,000 in 6 months. Meanwhile, I get the $950, which for me is worth it, let's say. Right? That's what people do, right? Now what happens after I sell you the loan for $950, I forgive the debt. In technical halacha, the loan is forgiven. And you're stuck.
Wait, I didn't get it.
Who's stuck? The one
who I lend your husband $1,000.
Okay.
Okay, now. In halacha, when I lend him the money, there's what's called shibud. He is bound
to give you back the money.
He's bound to give me the money, but he's bound to me.
Okay.
Now, I sell her the loan for $950. And I say to her, listen, the loan is due in 6 months. In 6 months, you're going to be able to collect $1,000. Give me $950 now. Okay? I'll have the money now, which I need. And she's happy because she doesn't need the money now. In 6 months, she'll get $50. Okay?
Extra.
Now, a week later, I say to your husband, you know what? You don't have to pay me. She's out $950.
Transaction went over.
Because he's not bound to her.
Exactly.
She didn't lend him the money. He's bound to me. Right? It's not that she took over the loan from me, because the bond is from him to me, not from him to her anymore. I mean, it's not so simple. I mean, you just can't get away with it so easily. It's not. But in technical, in theoretical halacha, I can forgive the debt. She's out the $950. She cannot collect the debt and finished.
But you can put in a paper that she might be smart and say.
Obviously, then you talk about conditions. But don't forget the conditions. Just simple transactions. Because she didn't come in. She's not in my stead. Because the bond, the halachic bond, is between you and me. You still owe me the money. The question is, do I have to pay them back the money? That's a whole other question involved. But technically, you're off the hook with the debt. The question is, did I cause her damage directly, indirectly? What type of damage did I cause her?
I remember you once said when you loaned the money, even if you paid back the same, but you gave them, like you took them out to dinner.
Yeah, that's interest.
You can't even do that.
Correct. According to many opinions, you can't even say thank you. If you let me, forget $1,000, you lend me $10, yeah, and I say to you thank you, you know, thanks for the loan, right?
Right.
Then when I give you back the $10, I paid you interest, because I gave you back $10 plus a thank you. That's not so. That's what halacha says. It's not so simple.
Rabbi,
you tell the guy you fool.
You say to the guy, you know, I'm not allowed to say thank you.
Rabbi.
That's what they say, by the way. People say, you know that I'm not allowed to say thank you.
But thank you is civil. It's not about love.
But I'm giving you satisfaction of a thank you.
You can say you're welcome.
When I say thank you to you, you feel good. So that's what it is. But
I remember this like it was yesterday. When I was bar mitzvah.
It was two years ago.
My father had to borrow $18 to buy